I don't want to scare people away because it's really not that rough, but do you want us to take a specific example to kind of make it a little bit more tactical?
Yeah, give us a real picture. Yes, please.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Austin McCullough. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Austin. One, he was already a key advisor to a software as a service in the fintech space that was acquired in early 2021. Two, he has personally made over, wait for it, 16,000 prospecting contacts on LinkedIn, as well as helping clients make over 25,000 prospecting contacts. And three, at 5'7", he walked on to play football at a community college where he later earned a scholarship at the beginning of his sophomore season. Austin McCullough, football star, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Undersized football star, yeah, we could say something like that. Thank you, George. Thank you for such a great introduction.
And you know, and at 5'7", why didn't you try out for basketball too?
You know, it's funny. It's funny. This is awesome. I'll keep this short. I'm becoming much better at golf now that I've been playing it over the past couple of years. But I told people all the time, if you give me three shots, I could go months without playing basketball, but I'm going to make one of the first three. And I'm talking about a three-pointer. I'm not talking about a layup, because I played basketball since I was a little kid. We grew up in a really good district that was very good at basketball. So it's funny. I played a lot of different sports, and I probably would have been pretty solid at basketball, football, sports, where height is important, if I would have had the height, but God did not bless me with that.
So you use the advantage you have. Let's take a look at the 16,000 contacts that you've gained using LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn is the social media of business, or that's how we think of it. And a lot of us are on there, and I keep hearing from people saying, well, I've tried prospecting on LinkedIn, but it doesn't work. What do you say to that?
You want the honest response?
I want the truth, the brutal truth.
I'm saying they don't work. I'm saying they're not doing it the right way. I mean, that's just the raw truth. And the reason why I'm laughing and I say it, and why whoever the listener is, if they're not having success, why they should be optimistic, is because they're right now listening to somebody who has done it more than 99.9% of the world. I've failed on it. I've done well on it. So the first thing I'll say is they probably don't have a process. So they don't know who they're reaching out to. If you don't know who you're reaching out to, you don't know what to say to them. You don't know how to engage a conversation. So really, they don't have the components all lined up. And then another key point, and we're going to come back to all of these, but they're too focused on themselves, trying to push what they have to offer, excited about what they have to offer. And that's not what resonates with your prospects, especially when they're complete strangers.
And yeah, that last one resonates with me, because I get too many replies or too many queries that start with the words, I just want to tell you about.
Uh-huh.
They lose me with those first few words.
Right, right. And we're not... Maybe that worked at some point on LinkedIn when the platform just started out, because there was not as much prospecting clutter. But as the platform has expanded, there's automation software, which I believe is a good thing we're going to get into. Everybody's getting pitched, whether it's on a new job, new product, new service, new school, whatever it is, everybody's getting pitched. So you have to find a way to cut through the clutter. And a lot of that comes to commonality, relatability, and again, not focusing on yourself, because that's what everybody else does. I mean, quite honestly, is the real main theme here. if everybody's going with the grain, you want to go against it, especially on LinkedIn, because that's how you separate yourself. That's how you differentiate yourself.
Zig versus zag.
Yep. Bingo.
All right. You teased us with you need a process, you need to know who, you need to know what, you need to know how. Tell us a little bit more. Walk us through that, please.
Yep. Actually, I have and I won't go through all the pieces here, but I have a 10-step effective online prospecting process, and it's a PDF that I usually give to clients and give to prospects to go through. So first things first, whenever I, like, for example, my main target market for my own business is financial representatives, a lot of financial advisors, and you get very clear on that. So like with mine, it's companies that have more than 10,000 financial reps, yada, yada, yada. Okay. So when you know who your target market is, you start to develop themes of what you know they struggle with, right? So with me, when I'm prospecting, I might not be doing as much research as I used to do on each individual, because by now, after making so many contacts, I know what financial reps struggle with. They're not struggling with grabbing a cup of coffee. They're struggling with finding new leads, right? And that's obvious. But when you know who your target market is, that helps you tailor your questions. From there, you need to know, obviously, which platform to reach out on. Right now, if we're talking about LinkedIn, we'll just isolate it there. But then from LinkedIn, then you need to now know what to say, right? And this is all stuff that I'm always working with clients on, because it's in a high level conversation like this, I'm thinking of financial reps, I'm thinking of entrepreneurs, I'm thinking of the chefs who might be doing outreach, coaches who might be doing outreach. They all have different things to say to their different target market. But do you see how much added complexity there is here? And now I don't want to scare people away, because it's really not that rough, but do you want us to take a specific example to kind of make it a little bit more tactical?
Yeah. Give us a real picture. Yes, please.
Okay, cool. So let's take a financial representative, and this is a pretty basic example of what they all want to go after. I'm not saying it's most effective, but it's just a common one. You have a financial representative, let's call them a financial advisor, who can help people with retirement planning. First, the financial advisor needs to think about who is a good person to work with. They might say doctors, okay? So then you could search for doctor on LinkedIn, which pulls up a large search result. First things first, always try to go after the second degree connections when sending an invitation connection request, because you have at least one mutual connection that way. If you go third degree connections, then you're more of a stranger. So always go to second degree. When you're reaching out to them, now I don't know exactly what question they would use here. There are so many different variables. But don't just say, hey, what does your retirement planning situation look like? Because then you're just selling right off the bat. Essentially, you want to think of a creative way to ask an open-ended question to get the answer that you want without it being the basic question that everybody else is going to ask. Does that make sense, George?
Yeah, it does. Something that doesn't look like what everyone else is saying.
100%. And then from there, given that they respond, you want to dig a little bit deeper to really see and get an understanding of where they're at. Some doctors might say, I have a financial advisor. Some doctors might say, I got one with a family friend. You just want to get them talking, because then you can go from there. So for example, if they already have a financial advisor, that's not necessarily a sense that they're not gonna be able to work with you, because maybe they got their financial advisor 20 years ago and the financial advisor is about to retire. Maybe they got their advisor 20 years ago, the advisor never reaches out to them, shows that they don't care about them, maybe they're ready to switch, right? But you can only figure out how to handle a conversation by getting the other person to talk. And that's what not enough people in sales do that, because they're too focused on themselves, they're too worried about pushing what they have to offer. Do you see where I'm coming from, George?
I do, and so the signal that I see there, the lesson I see there is that just because a prospect comes back and saying, I already have someone who provides your service, mm-hmm. that doesn't mean you need to stop the conversation. And I also suppose if they have actually taken the initiative to respond with that, that suggests that they do want to have a conversation.
Oh, you're so right. That's a really good point. Even if somebody doesn't respond with a positive response, the fact that they're responding still shows that they have some level of interest. Another thing that I want to say before I forget, people as in sales professionals, are way too one-dimensional, right? Let's take a financial representative, okay? Because I'm going to show the different prongs. A lot of them think that they can only get clients, whereas there are some firms where the financial representatives can recruit so they can build their own team, okay? And they can also get referral partners who could be in the business or who could not be in the business. So right there, you have three different options, right? You have client, recruit, referral partner. So somebody doesn't want to be a client, they could be a recruiter, referral partner. Somebody doesn't want to be a recruit, they could be a client, referral partner. You get the point here. So when you have those different avenues, you have different options to take the conversation, right? Because let's go away from the doctor example, let's go to an accountant, okay? And this is something that a decent amount of financial advisors already put into practice. Maybe when you reach out to an accountant, they don't want to be a client, they don't want to be a recruit, but accountants, the nice part about their business model is everybody has to do their taxes, right? So accountants building their book of business might not necessarily be as tough because people have to work with them. People don't have to work with a financial advisor. Now, I believe that they should, but that's another conversation. So if they reach out with the intention of it becoming a client, but they have an open mind to switch to the referral partnership, then they still keep that dialogue going. And that might open them to other clients, right? But a lot of people have too much of a tunnel vision approach when prospecting online. And so where they could have an opportunity, they completely put it aside, they blow it off, they ruin it for themselves because they don't understand the right context of thinking when prospecting online. Does that make sense?
It does. So it sounds like when reaching out to prospects on LinkedIn, for example, we might need to consider the best outcome is that I sign them up as a customer and they're $1 million deal. Yeah. Now, and then you need to ask yourself the question, if I can't get $1 million deal, if I can't get them as a customer, what are the other possible positive outcomes here?
A lot. And that could be, like I said, maybe they're not a client, but maybe they are a referral partner who can open the doors. Maybe they're a great networking connection where they're going to come back. I mean, let's put it this way. I could meet somebody who maybe I'm prospecting for financial reps for potential prospects for my business. Let's say they have a software background. I'm not a technical person. I'm definitely the typical sales, marketing, entrepreneur, like that stuff. Technical development, no, right? So I'm not good with software development, but eventually if I ever wanted to start a business where I needed to have a software built, that would be very valuable to me. And so why would I be upset that this person is not going to be a client when in the future they could be a much more valuable connection? Rather than one client, they could be a business partner, a co-founder of future venture. Or maybe I run into an investor. I want to soon be getting into angel investing and then eventually perhaps into venture capital. And if I do that, if I get more connections, I know which group to invest with. I could go start with a firm. I know where to look. My awareness is built. So a lot of people are too short-term focused. And that actually brings up a really good point. The best way to sell online, or this is the best way to sell in general, is to not have the commission breath. Have you ever heard of that before, George?
Commission breath, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, people have bad breath and it scares other people away. With commission breath, it's where you seem too salesy because everybody knows you want the commission. They know that you want their money.
It's like when, and I don't think you see it so much now, but at one time, if you walked into a car dealership, they'd be waiting there to pounce.
Yes, you're completely right. You're completely right. And that pushes people away. So I think the toughest part, and I think I said this before, but not I think. I know the toughest part of online prospecting is the beginning. Here's why. Actually, we did in another show, George, we talked about online prospecting with your cold market versus warm market prospecting. Online, so LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook versus the warm market, family and friends. Your warm market, if you're in a graph, and I'm gonna use my hands for this, but with anybody who's listening through the podcast, obviously you can't see it, so I'll try to explain my best. The warm market starts off a little bit quicker because you know these people, you have rapport built with them, but then it flattens out because your warm market only is so large. Your online prospecting starts out slower. I'll be the first to say that because it takes time to build momentum. It takes time to build trust and rapport and commonality with these people online who are strangers previously. But if you do that consistently, it gets exponential because online the market is so much larger. So the reason why I bring this up, you aren't capped at how many people to follow up with. So at the beginning, you don't have many options. And a lot of the time people start online prospecting because they need business now. It's a great long-term solution. It is not a great short-term solution. If you're willing to wait 1 to 2 months, a month and a half, to see real results, then things will start clicking, okay? Because if you do that, it'll take a few weeks to maybe get somebody warmed up to want to get on a call. Not even 3 or 4 weeks, probably about 1 or 2 weeks. And then you get them on a call, and then from there, it's good. From there, you get them on a call. Maybe they're a client. Maybe they're a referral partner. You're building out your network. But a lot of people, they never get to the point of building the relationships. They never get to the exponential point because they're too focused on selling themselves at the beginning because they want the commission breath. So any advice I would give here, I know this is kind of a long tangent, but it's an important one. Get it out of your head to close business right now. Focus on building the relationships, and as the byproduct, if you're willing to wait a couple of months at most, then things will really start to pick up.
So let's look at using LinkedIn as a prospecting tool.
Sure.
And so if we're reaching out cold, I'm hearing that our initial goal should not be to close a deal, but to establish the beginning of a relationship that could result in positive outcomes. One of them might be that person becomes a client.
Right.
Is that a mindset to approach it with?
That's a good mindset. What I would say is not even in terms of networking, because too many people make small talk, and that bothers a lot of people too. It kills me because, for example, I haven't completely handed off responding my LinkedIn DMs to my assistant yet, but some days I might be responding to 40 or 50 messages. And when I'm responding to my prospects, I put a lot of mental focus into their situation, what they said, letting them know that I actually heard what they said. I paid attention to it. So when somebody says, hey, how's your day going? They don't care how my day is going. So that's one thing I want to say. Never ask somebody how their day is going if you don't actually know them, especially if you're trying to sell them, because people can see through that. So don't do that. Now, in terms of getting back to the original point, it's okay to be direct in terms of asking questions if you're really trying to solve a pain point for somebody, because if it's a real pain and you're trying to solve it, you're trying to help them with something, right? But don't have the intention to go close them right away, kind of like what you talked about, George. Have the intention of being curious, being kind of like a researcher. Ask the open-ended questions, get a sense to see if it's good for them, and then if anything, your intention should be to set a meeting to learn more, not to close business. So focus on the meeting, not on the client yet.
Take us through the phases of the level of contact. So the initial cold contact, you mentioned automation.
Yeah.
So you use an automated system for sending out on LinkedIn?
Yeah. So do you want me to take you through my process of how I prospect? Okay. The automation software that I use will send out the initial connection requests on LinkedIn. There's other stuff that I can do, but I'll keep this example basic. Somebody either accepts it or they don't accept the connection request. If they don't accept it, never going to communicate with them, not in contact with them. If they accept it and they reply, then the conversation's ongoing. If they accept it and they don't reply to the first message, I have it set that 92 minutes later, another follow-up message will be sent. And then about 2 days and 22 minutes later, another one is sent. I have about 3 total follow-up messages, so 4 total that go out. There's the connection request and the message that goes along with it, 3 follow-ups. Now, sometimes you get some people who never end up, they'll accept it, but they never respond to any of those 4 messages. And then you get other people who respond to the first, the second, the third, or the fourth. You get where I'm coming from? So that's that. Once somebody replies, that's when I automatically go into start asking the open-ended questions to get them talking. Okay, let's say that they get talking. I discover a few pain points. At that point, I say, you know, it seems like you struggle with this. I can help you out. How about we jump on a call? Okay, sometimes you get more objections there. You got to handle them. If they say yes, that's where I ask them for permission to send them my scheduling link. So I use Calendly. I'm not sure if you do or not, George, but no matter what scheduling link, I always ask for permission because that's just another layer to make sure that they actually show up to the call, okay? Once they say yes, this is something that I think this is kind of magic in what I do and a lot of people don't do, and I don't know why. When I send them the link, I also go into HubSpot, which is my CRM tool. It doesn't matter what CRM anybody uses. I already create the follow-up task because I don't want to bank on them setting up the meeting. Life happens. Sometimes there are deaths. Sometimes people are sick. Sometimes they just miss the message. You never know what happens. So I set up the follow-up task so that I remember to come back to the conversation just in case they never set it up. the whole point, this is the main philosophy behind my approach. I don't want anything to slip through the cracks. If I have a prospect, I don't want to forget about them. If I have a prospect, I don't want to go years without talking to them. I want to make sure to be top of mind everybody, for everybody, as many of my prospects as possible. Because I remember hearing about a year ago from Grant Cardone, who's really big in the real estate space. He's very successful there. He goes, the number one reason why small businesses fail is obscurity, which means people don't know about them. So I want to be top of mind for my client or for my prospects, and that happens when I'm following up with them. I want to be the first person that comes to mind that if they need any type of sales help, they need online prospecting help, they're not getting the results they want, they don't have enough leads, I'm the person to go to because I'm right in front of them. And then to kind of finish that up before I let you go, George, then of course you're doing your follow-ups with the CRM, but not enough people have a clear process. Like, I just walked through exactly what I'm doing, so I already know what I'm doing before it even happens, and not enough people are proactive in that sense. Does that make sense?
It does. So I see you're following a process. You're using online software, one for automation, two for CRM, and I'm guessing, so the goal of the outreach online is to make a phone call, have a call.
Mm-hmm.
A phone call or a Zoom call.
It's eventually to have a Zoom call. Yes, yes.
And so where you can have a real conversation.
Mm-hmm.
One of the challenges of prospecting that some people fear is the numbers. Give us an idea of the numbers. You know, how many reach out on automation turn into how many replies turn into how many phone calls? And I know it's not an exact science, but give us an idea of the scale.
It's not, but for my business, we've measured it for our clients and I've measured it for myself. I get these numbers. I know for our clients, for my numbers, they're both in two different locations, so I might muddy it a bit. But first things first, LinkedIn used to actually let you send 500 weekly connection requests. Now they only let you send 100, which is not a bad thing because it's forced us all to work on quantity or quality over quantity. Because I used to be able to just blast out messages. Like I said, I mean, 2,000 per month instead of, yeah, that would be the right math. 2,000 per month instead of 400. Now they let you do 80% less. So anyways, out of those numbers, I've realized that the typical acceptance rate is typically 15 to 20%. Okay. Now, with my firm, on the contrast, it's closer to 26%. There's a lot of reasons why, okay? In terms of response rate, so that was acceptance rate. In terms of average response rate, it's typically about 25 to 35%. So a little bit higher with the response rate because it's people who have already accepted it responding. With my firm, it's a little bit closer to actually 59% with the response rate. I've actually always found that just really, because it's not hard to get people talking when you know how to get people talking, when you focus on them, you ask open-ended questions, but anyways, we can get into that. So from there, typically, so you go, let's go through the numbers. You send out 100 connection requests, and we'll go through my firm, we won't go through the average numbers. You send out 100 connection requests. If you're getting a typical 26% acceptance rate, now you're at 26. But for easy numbers, let's say you get a 50% response rate. So 26 now goes to 13, okay? And I'll pull up in my online calculator because this next math isn't gonna be easy. Let's for easy numbers instead of 13, let's say 12, okay? Now from there, the average conversation to meeting rate is about 25%. So if you take 25% of 12, if the math is right, that is 3, 6, 9, 12.
That is.
I thought 4 right away too, but 4 would be.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, 25% would be 3. Yeah, 4.
I'm not a math expert. I'll say that. I'll
4 say times that. 3 is 12. Yeah.
But anyways, out of every 100 contacts, then that's 3 meetings that you should get set. And now closing rates, I don't track that as close because everybody, it's different from person to person, industry to industry. But those are the very clear numbers. So then if you know you need to do more, then you gotta get creative with it because LinkedIn has caps. So sometimes spouses who are in business, they might both have LinkedIn accounts so they can double their output.
So that gives us a pretty good idea of the scale. So if you wanna have, if you wanna have 3 meetings, start by reaching out to 100 people.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not one of those people who loves saying, you know, sales is all just a numbers game because I mean, it's true it is, but ironically enough, I was talking with a client recently about this. A lot of people think that they need to get more people into their pipeline. So for anybody who's watching, I'll hold my hands up like a funnel, okay? You can think of like a cylinder. We all know what a funnel is. Right now, my hands are closer together, okay? You can think of a lot of dots throughout. Actually, I have a graphic. I should have just pulled up with the graphic. But anyways, in the funnel, you have a lot of dots representing people. But at the bottom of the funnel, you have one. That's your end result, one. Now, I'll hold my hands up again, and it's a wider funnel, which means you have more dots, you have more people in your funnel, but at the bottom, it's still one. You have a smaller funnel, you have a bigger funnel, and yet the end result is still one. So what's happening here is with the bigger funnel, you're putting more prospects into it. But the problem is, if you don't know how to close, it doesn't matter how many prospects you have because you're still getting the result, which is one. So as much of a fan I am of boosting your outreach so that you can get as many prospects as possible, you also need to make sure that your sales process is cleaned up so you're not wasting all those leads, right?
Now, does it help in prospecting if one is publishing on LinkedIn, providing information or even opinions? Does that help the process?
It does. This is a really good topic. George, do you know the difference between inbound and outbound marketing?
Well, tell us, help us understand, because sure. I might not define it correctly.
100%. I probably won't either, but this is a very basic example and definition. Outbound marketing is where you're reaching out to your prospects. Inbound marketing is where you hope that they come to you, right? So you need to be doing both. And this is something that a lot of the financial reps that I work with get wrong. My firm focuses on the outbound. So lead generation, we're reaching out to our prospects through their LinkedIn DMs to get conversation started, versus if you keep it on the same platform, posting content is a form of inbound, because you're posting the content and you're hoping that people come to you. They're hoping they like your post. They're hoping they comment. You're hoping that they reach out to you because they say, hey, I saw this post, wanted to ask you a couple of questions, right? Too many people think that inbound is going to do the job and get the results for you. I've been posting content consistently for about 2 years now. You're not going to have thousands of people knocking at your door every single day wanting to work with you just because you post good content, right? The odds of somebody seeing all your posts is unlikely. The odds of somebody seeing a post and automatically being ready to buy is not super likely, right? So that's why I'm a big fan of the outbound, although you should be doing both, because when you do the outbound, you're in more control. You never know what's going on in somebody's life. So the inbound, you could post a great piece of content today. You could post it tomorrow and get completely different results, right?
How can one leverage the published material? How can you leverage that in your outreach?
That's a, George, you ask such good questions. Do you know that?
Thank you.
So for example, with the sequences, when I'm doing outreach for myself or with my clients, you can completely customize your scripts. So if I wrote a post and it was like 5 tips for financial advisors, what they should do, and 2 mistakes that financial advisors do, which actually I might do a post like that soon. You could make the post, post it, get the URL of the post, and put it into your outreach scripts. So you could do it to promote it. Or if you have an event, you could promote the event. You could do anything as long as you have the creativity to think of it in the first place. So that's a way that you can combine your outbound and your inbound to get them to work properly together. You see where I'm coming from?
I do, and you just triggered an idea for me. So for example, I could include in my outreach, I could include a link to, hey, if you're using LinkedIn for your prospecting, maybe you want to listen to this podcast with Austin McCullough and get some ideas.
You're completely right. I'm about to put on a free online prospecting webinar. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to have a sequence with my automation software. I'm going to put, I don't know what the script's going to be exactly, but here's the event. This is why it's beneficial to you. This is how it's going to make your life so much easier. Here's the link to register for the event. Go sign up. And it's all going to be automated. I'm sure I'm just going to get person after person just signing up. Also, I have partnerships. I'm going to be putting it in emails. But that's why it's nice to just know what your intentions are, what you're going for, because then you know how to set it up. You know how to get to the end result.
Austin, you told us you use HubSpot for your CRM. I'm curious, what do you use for your automated outreach?
100%. So I use Connected. I'm an agency partner, so I license the software. I pay a fee each year. And what's actually really cool, I'm glad that you asked that. So HubSpot has a free version. That's why I started with it in the first place. I didn't even know which CRM to start with, and the lowest barrier to entry was the one 2 years ago that I didn't have to spend anything for. But what's really cool about this, and why I'm going to boost up Connected really quick, anytime somebody accepts a connection request on LinkedIn, their contact information flows into HubSpot. So I have almost 5,000 contacts. If we take 5,000 and we say, let's go through the math a little bit. I'll pull up on the computer. Those 5,000 contacts, let's say they all took a minute. That's 5,000 minutes, right? You divide that by 60 for an hour. That means I've saved roughly 83 hours. If all of those only took a minute, when really it took longer because you had to put their first name, last name, email, number, copy, paste, all that. So roughly you double that, 166 hours. That's a few weeks worth of time of just inputting data because it automatically goes in there. Plus, then in all in one spot, I have all my prospects' emails. And then if they have their phone number on their profile, they have that too. So that's the cool part is there's an integration. So they all, it's seamless. Like what I talked about before, I don't want things falling through the cracks. So that works perfectly well for my sales process.
Yeah. So I'm here, some ideas are going off in my head. And I imagine that folks listening to this are, might be thinking about their LinkedIn prospecting process that they need to, well, one, they need to have a process, and two, they might need to polish it up a bit. Austin, if people want to find out more about your services, about how you help people prospect, they can find you at your website, and that is McCullough Advising.com. Mm-hmm. And you can find that link in the description below. And McCullough is McCullOH advising.com. Austin, in wrapping up, if you could give one, two, or three encouraging pieces of advice to salespeople who have maybe become disillusioned with LinkedIn, what would you say to them to take another look at it, take another go?
Great question. If you have not had success with prospecting online, or even if you haven't done it before, so regardless, you haven't had success because you didn't or you've never done it, take 30 minutes to an hour before you even start or before you restart and put together an actual plan. Now, obviously working with somebody who has done it before can critique your plan, can help you a lot with it. But if you know who you're reaching out to, you already have a few scripts put together, you already know what questions you want to ask, and you know what you want your end result to be, it's all going to work much better. And then also know what you want to measure for it too. So have expectations of, if I'm doing so many contacts, I want to see how many accepted connection requests I get, how many responses I get, because then you can tell if it was a success or a failure, or and also meeting set as well. So that's what I would have to say. I know it's a lot of different variables, but a lot of people are just kind of shooting from the hip. And when you have a plan to follow, you're much more likely to get the results that you want.
Have a plan to follow. My guest today is Austin McCullough, reminding you that maybe you need to zig when everyone else zags.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.